session number 26542, Real 4.
Anyway, I got drafted onto HMS Icarus.
When was that exactly?
That was a destroyer.
When?
Oh, sorry, when? That would be 1943. March 1943. Anyway, I was given a partnership because, like the training establishments, all naval vessels have a partnership which you were allocated to work, and I was allocated the foretop. I was also given, I'd already been given my mess, number two mess. I was also put in the blue watch, because there were three watches, red, white and blue, and I was put into the blue watch for cruising, what they call cruising stations. And I was put into the port watch, I think, for defence stations. That's meant you were into two watches, four on, four off.
Can you explain your different jobs? What's your ordinary job?
I'm just a seaman. I was just a seaman. And so that's what I was. I was a seaman. And when my partnership being mained up, you know, you had to help in tying the ship up and coiling the ropes and all that. And when you were turned to for working, you were chipping paint or painting or scrubbing or doing all sorts of things like that, maintaining the gear. Because later on, I qualified as a seaman torpedoman, which what they called a non-substantive rate. But I was just a plain trained man, or a boy seaman trained man. But because you'd had a pretty general training in your initial training, you could be sent to guns crew. You wouldn't go as a gun layer or the trainer or a breech worker, because they were qualified gunnery rates, as we called gunnery rates. But you could be a shell handler, you could be the sight setter. In fact, I was made the sight setter of X-Gun. I've never sat on. I mean, all right, in training I've done it, but I've made sight setter on X-Gun, which was the you had A and B guns up forward, X and Y guns aft, and I was sight setter on X-Gun when you sat there and you just put the ranges on the sights as they came through the headphones when the time arose.
But that was your action station?
Yeah, my action stations, you see.
Can we break down everything that you did on board? You mentioned your job as an ordinary...
Sorry.
Mentioned your job as an ordinary seaman.
Yeah.
You said it was a defence station as well.
Well, depending on the... normally, when you were at sea, you were in three watches, four on, through the Navy thing, you see. But when you were at defence stations, that was normally when you were in a high-risk area, you know. If in fact, you know, you've got a signal that, you know, a pack of U-boats coming around, you weren't at action stations when everybody was there. You were at defence stations, which meant that instead of a third of the ship's company closed up, you had half the ship's company closed up, ready for action should it arise, and before they piped action stations, something like that, you see. So that's defence stations, and normally... when you were sort of approaching a danger, well, I mean, it was an all danger area, but intelligence was such, and they were picking up signals and all that, that you knew that probably that, excuse me, the nearest U-boat pack was maybe 200 miles away, you see. Depending on the captain, whether he would call you defence stations or cruising stations. And that's what you would be. And my defence station, again, was sight setter on X-Gun. That was my action station.
We'll pause there, someone's coming.
Yes, it was on X-Gun action station as the sight setter.
So explain the setup of the gun and how you received orders and how...
Well, HMS Icarus was a destroyer which had been launched in 1936, and So he was armed with four 4.7 guns. A and B guns were forward, X and Y were aft. And I was the science editor on the X gun. I wasn't a qualified gunnery rate, but you had gunnery ratings as the trainer, as the gun layer, who was the most important chap on the gun, the gun layer, and the breech worker and the loaders. And I had earphones on, and I would, when we went to action stations, I would report X-Gun TS. Now, TS meant transmitting station, and that was in under the bridge, where it was all controlled from there. And I would say, X-Gun TS, and they would reply through my headphones, TX, X-Gun. Then I knew they were referring to me, because I could also even say, TX, B-Gun. So, TX, X-Gun. And I would say, X-Gun closed up, ready for action. And they would repeat it. They would say, all right, TX, X-Gun, X-Gun closed up, ready for action. Fine. And then I would wait, we would wait for orders, you see. And we would just hang around there. And then suddenly, I was never engaged in any surface gun actions as such until we came to submarines. But we would go to practice, you see. And I can remember off the Newfoundland coast, they would exercise the gun crews by firing at icebergs. So, and we'd find, they'd say, right, target bearing, wherever the bearing was. Right, they'd go, TSF gun, X gun TS. They'd say, right, with AG, that's high explosive. With AG, load, load, load. And I would say, with AG, load, load, load. Now, the breech worker would open the breech and the loaders would put in a shell, close the breech, and say, right, X gun loaded, or TS X gun, X gun TS, X gun loaded. And it's all right, target of so and so, in this case an iceberg, bearing so and so, depending on the bearing, you see, and they would, the trainer would then train the gun round onto that bearing, and of course they would see the target, and then it's a TS X gun, X gun TS, range 4,000, 5,000, as the case might be. And you would say, right, range so-and-so. And the gun layer would then repeat that. You'd say, range 4,000. No, indicating to the gun captain that he had heard the order. And then he would lay the gun. The trainer's already trained the gun round. And he's lined it up on the target. And then the gun layer would then lay the gun so that when we've got the order, shoot. And they say, right, on, and then the gun layer would say, right, target, on. And then I would say, X-gun TS, TS, X-gun, X-gun trained, layer on. And they say, right, shoot. And I say, right, shoot, shoot, shoot. And then they would, the gun layer, they would fire the gun.
Who would you actually be speaking to?
Well, somebody in the TS would be somebody like me, and I've seen them. You see, that would be his actual station.
No, no, who are you receiving the orders from?
Well, from whoever was operating in the TS, the transmitting station. Because
so they would be getting them from what?
They would be getting them from
the director.
From visual observation, from radar observations. You see, all this was coming in into the transmitting station, the targets, range. And then this would be then passed out to. See, sometimes the captain on the bridge would say, it never happened to me, but in training it did, you know, you might three or four ships, and he'd say, right, shift target. And then, of course, TS would then say, shift target. I mean, you've been concentrating on this one, and then the captain thinks that one's had enough, he would then say shift targets, so he'd go on the other one. So he would overrule whatever the radar or visual observation had been. Sorry. And then we would carry on, fallout action stations, and then you say, right, fallout action stations, not defence routine, four-lane cruising stations, and whoever would do red watch, white watch, blue watch, which is red watch cruising stations, blue watch cruising stations, and then you'd carry on then. But every, you see, at sea, you would be, in, generally speaking, in a three-watch position. So you'd work all the forenoon, from 8 o'clock in the morning to midday, and then you would finish, you would have make and mend from 4 o'clock, from 12 o'clock until 4 o'clock. Everybody, except the afternoon watch. You see, because, don't forget, you were in three watches, so you would have, say, the forenoon watch, 8 to 12. And then, if you were red watch, and then white watch would have the afternoon, which was from 4, from 12 until 4. Blue watch would have the first dog watch, which was from 4 until 6. And then red watch would then come on and have the first watch, 8 until 12, midnight. So yours, you worked all forenoon, but you, because you know, you would have you would have the middle, which the first watch, which is 8 to 12, or the middle, which was 12 until 4, or the forenoon, which was 4 until 8. You see, so at some stage, you would only get 4 hours rest of the night.
Can you explain the organisation of the Seamen's Department?
Oh, the Seamen's Department. Well, there was just basically you, the seamen. If you on the destroyer, on the Icarus, you said, if you were folk for a party as a seaman, you had responsibilities for the anchors and cables and the ropes and breasts. See, anchors and cables were if you were lying offshore, you were anchored. But if you were lying alongside, you had ropes and breasts. Which, well, obviously is the word where it says the ropes would come from the bow, or in the case of the quarterdeck, or from the stern, or from the main top midship. It would go over a bollard there, or it would go over a bollard here. And then the breasts would be wire ropes, which would come from the bow, and they would go right aft, or from the stern, they would come right forward. So that although you were held in that way, the breasts stopped you going backwards and forwards. So that would be their function of a seaman on the folks from the main top or the quarter deck, you see. You would also, as a seaman, you know, you would be chipping paintwork, you would cleaning paintwork. If you were duty seaman in the mess, you would be preparing the meal. You would scrub out the mess deck. You would scrub the mess tables. You would be peeling the potatoes. You would be preparing the meals.
What I was hoping to get at was the structure of, I should have said, rather than organisation, the structure of the Seamen's Branch. How did it...
Well,
the hierarchy.
Well, the hierarchy, you had... With the hierarchy, you had... The chief pay officer, the buffer, he would be the coxswain of the boat. He was the senior rating. Then under him, you had heads of department, petty officers. You would have a petty officer of the main top, the quarter deck, petty officer of the forecastle. So buffer comes down from petty officers to the parts of what we call parts of ship. And then under the petty officers, there would be leading hands, leading seamen. And they would probably get two or three leading seamen who would have a particular responsibility, maybe for the whaler or for the motorboat, to ensure that was clean, it was always ready, it was securely lashed at sea. And he would have maybe half a dozen seamen, ordinary seamen, boy seamen, able seamen with him. Or they would have to look after the rigging to ensure that the rigging, which held the masts and and all that was oiled and greased and working. And the that was the function of the seaman's branch. But of course, then you had the specialist branches. You had the communications branch, who were the signalmen. They either used the flags or the lamp or on WT.
Did you choose to go into the seaman's branch? Or
oh, yes, I chose.
Did you have any other options?
No, I chose to go in as a seaman branch. I chose to get joints as kind of seaman branch, but everybody has the same basic training. And then when you've done the basic training, you went to sea as a seaman, or you went further, you went to HMS Mercury if you wanted to be in the signals, in the communications. See? And of course the stokers were entirely different. They would do their same 10 weeks as we did, but then they would then go on to learn about boilers and engine rooms and all that sort of stuff, and they would be messed separately, and they had their own hierarchy the same as we did through the chief stoker with various parts of ship they used to look after. And the signalman would usually would go to HMS Mercury to qualify either in visual signals or WT, wireless telegraphy. So that, generally speaking, was how we operated the seaman branch. And they were all the buffer, if you like, the coxswain, the chap in charge, would be responsible to the first lieutenant. The Jimmy the one. You've probably heard that expression.
What was the mess like? Can you describe what it was like to live in a mess or on a mess?
It was very uncomfortable. Very uncomfortable. It was usually always damp, always wet. Of course, all the ports were sealed when you were at sea, and all what they call the X and Y doors were closed. It was very uncomfortable living, really, because there wasn't a lot of space to sling your hammock. You had to sling a hammock. And you could sling your hammock because, you know, I was a late arrival with these three others on board Icarus. You know, we had to take our chance where we slung our hammock, you see, within the mess. But as people were drafted, you know, when you got back alongside again, perhaps people had been drafted, they were either being promoted, or in my case later on when I was sent to port to Vernon to qualify as a torpedoman, it was Buggin's choice, you moved wherever there was a better billet for slinging your hammock. But it was quite uncomfortable, really. But I don't suppose you really thought of anything else. You know, if it was rough, all your mess traps, as we used to call the plates, and my, you know, would be. You have to watch sure they didn't go on the deck, and if they did go on the deck, they would clear it up. Although they were keen on personal cleanliness, the bathrooms themselves, you know, were very tiny. You could only get four in the seaman's bathroom with a little tiny bowl, which was balanced on gimbals. So as the ship rose, it kept level and the water didn't splash out. And generally speaking, it was cold water anyway. But when alongside, after you've been at sea, alongside, they would put the steam pipe on. You had a sort of a big cylinder, and you'd put a steam pipe in and turn the steam on, and that heat the water up, and you got hot water. See, but that's very, very occasionally that. And also, you could always go ashore anyway when you're alongside to some of the seaman's hostels and get a bath, something like that. And you're washing, you had to keep yourself clean and change your overalls and your underwear and all that, and you would wash all that, and that would be taken down to the boiler room and hung up in the boiler room to dry. So But the actual messes themselves, I mean, I was in the seaman's mess, number two mess, which was a lot more comfortable than perhaps the communication ratings, the WT ratings, who, generally speaking, when you think the ship's bow is pointed like that, and we were this end, number two mess, the signalmen were down below decks again, in a pointed bit, very, very tight. Wasn't very comfortable at all. But then, of course, that was an H-class, an I-class destroyer, and of course, as the war progressed, and bigger and better destroyers and ships were coming off the line, so the messing arrangements were better anyway.
What about food? How did you...
Well, the food, we were what they called canteen messing. And what it meant, that the clerk of the mess, the leading seaman in charge of the mess, had a certain amount a day to feed the mess. And if he had 20 people in the mess, and he was allowed 2 shillings a day, that's 40 shillings, that's £2 to feed the mess. And he would work out a menu of breakfast, tea and dinner, or breakfast, dinner and tea, within that budget. And he would go to the canteen, the ship's canteen, which was operated by the NAFI, and he would buy what he would want for our lunch, our breakfast or anything like that. And every other mess would do the same, you see. Now that was called canteen messing. And if you had a good caterer, as they were called, after 3 months, you would get a rebate. If he hadn't spent all the money he was allowed for the mess, he would get it in cash and he would give it back to you. Or, if he was a bad caterer, you would have to pay him, or rather, he would have to pay the canteen, say, all right, quietly. You owe the after 3 months, you owe the canteen £4. So you'd have to come round the 20 of us and take so much from us. That was called canteen messing.
Where was the food prepared?
In the galley. The food was prepared in the galley, which was usually an oil-fired galley, which was just aft of the bridge and just forward of the funnel. And you'd have two or three chef cooks, you know, who joined the Navy as cooks. And that would be their job to prepare. And you would, the Kilkenness would ensure that the duty watch, as I've mentioned earlier, would prepare the meal for lunch or whatever, for dinner. You would then take it in your mess kettles, you know, your potatoes, and you'd have a net, you'd put the potatoes in the net, and you'd put it in the kettle, and there would be a two mess. And the same with a tray with the meat cut up or whatever, identified with the mess, and the duty watch or the duty messman would take it along to the galley and they would cook it for you. Depending on the caterer, if it was six messes, you might have, you know, the cooks would be cooking six different meals, you see. And then, you know, when you were piped for dinner, hands to dinner, the duty mess would go along and you'd say two mess, and you'd get your potatoes given to you and whatever you'd prepared, and you'd bring it back along, serve it all out, and you'd eat it, and then you'd wash up afterwards. Now that was called canteen messing, but in many establishments, particularly in shore establishments and very large battleships, and that they would have general messing, whereas that. The professionals, the supply department, and all that, they would lay on the meals. You'd have to prepare it. But they would say, right, well, we're going to have roast beef, we're going to have boiled potatoes, beans, or whatever. And the whole ship's company would get it. And you, as your mess, you would prepare the potatoes, and you'd go along to the supply department, and they would issue it to you, and you'd take it back to your mess. And you would get it, but you would prepare it to take to the galley and they would cook it for you. That was called general messing. And you, whether they spent the right amount or not, you don't know, but you knew that if they spent more, they wouldn't come back to you for it.
Was the mess inspected regularly?
Oh, yes, you had rounds every day of an evening. Yes, our first lieutenant used to do the rounds at 9 o'clock. The duty watch that had just come off, if you'd had the last dog watch, which was 6 until 8, you were cleaning up the messes because the other watch, first watch, had just gone on, 8 to 12. And so, having just come off watch, you would have your meal, and then you would prepare and clean up the messes, all the areas anyway, sweep and ditch the gash and one thing and another. And then the coxswain would bring the first lieutenant round with the boatswain's mate, who would, with his boatswain's call, he would pipe the still, which is a shrill note on the boatswain's call, and you would say, right, attention for rounds. And you would all have to stand to attention on the mess deck while the first lieutenant inspected everything. And depending how he felt, whether it was a quick inspection and he just walked round, or whether, you know, somebody had upset him or he'd been upset or something, you know, you'd lift pot lids and things like that, and either give you a re-scrub, which meant you had to clean it all again, or you'd pass round. So that was inspected every day at 9 o'clock at night. Now, when you were in harbour, it's a different thing, because you would also have rounds at 9 o'clock at night, but either Saturday morning or Sunday morning, you would have captain's rounds, which meant that, you know, you really had to go to town and everything was polished. All the bright work was polished and things were scrubbed, and you would pay more attention to things which you just cursorily cleaned for normal rounds. You know, it was spick and span. The place shone for the captain's rounds, and he'd come round at 11 o'clock and he would, again, depending on how he felt, whether he would give a cursory glance or whether he may, again, pick up all sorts of things. He'd perhaps even ask somebody to lift the lid of a locker which you used to have to sit on, which had bolted to the bulkhead, and lift it up. And if that wasn't tidy, you know, the person whose locker that was, it would be all thrown out on the deck and it'd have to be packed. Because that's just how we felt at the time, you see. So, you know, even unseen things had to be tidy for captain's room. But no, that you know, they had a fetish for cleanliness. Although it wasn't standard when you were at sea on a destroyer or anything like that, when you were ashore in barracks, you had to change into what they call night clothing. you'd have been in your working dress all day long, overalls. You'd have been cleaning bilges, you'd have been cleaning torpedo tubes, you'd have been doing all sorts of things. And you would, they would pipe hands to tea, and you'd go and get a shower or a bath or a good wash. And then you'd have to change into your night clothing, which was, generally speaking, the blue trousers and the blue top without the collar, the blue jacket's collar on your white front. That was night clothing. So they were basically seeing that, all right, although you had been doing grubby, dirty work, you know, you never went into the mess, or you never spent time in the canteens or the messes in your dirty working gear. You always had to move into your night, what they call change into night, shift into night clothing. Which, in some cases, I used to call divisions as well at night to make sure everybody. And that was a throwback to Nelson's days, you know, the wooden walls, when they used to have to muster everybody to ensure that nobody had fallen overboard or, you know, been trapped below or something like that. But that gradually died out. But you still had to shift into night clothing so that you were clean. And presentable.